There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 415, March 25th, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by Marin Karting, now joined with Cameron Karting, and a sponsor of the Northern California Karting Series. Find them at marinkarting.com. Check them out, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Albert Park, not to be boring, Hamilton remembers lying is bad, Red Bull promises to be strong, and of course, Motorsports Mondial with the Swami, Senor Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Oh, just wonderful. And you know, I was reflecting on how people just freaked out and thought that the Bahrain race was boring. And then, you know...
You mean boring?
Exactly. And it was... But and then a lot of people were blaming the racetrack. And so what I did was I got my 2005 Formula One race of Bahrain, and I watched practice, I watched some qualifying, and I'm telling you, it was exciting. Now, of course, we had V10s, we had Fernando and the Renault, Oviedo, and we had Schumacher, who thought he had pole position. And then this guy from España comes out.
Okay, next question, Mr. Rogers. Was it exciting because of the participants, or was it exciting because it was a good race?
It was a great season, but...
I didn't answer my question, Mr. Rogers.
It was wonderful, but to see Schumacher's face when Fernando got pole in Bahrain, that led to a great race. We had emotion. We're lacking lots of
How
other things.
How did you see Michael Schumacher's face?
Great thing to watch. So Bahrain's not to blame. There's been some good stuff going on there. I think the cars are definitely...
Well, I think you've got a combination of things. That track doesn't lend itself exceptionally well to great racing. And then you throw in cars that are basically brand new, running rules that are brand new. So nobody knows what they're going to do. So everybody's playing super conservative. And on a track like Bahrain, super conservative turns out to be super boring.
I agree. But this weekend is not going to be boring, Stephen.
No, Albert Park, a much better track. Everybody has a little bit better idea of what's going to happen. And number one, it's not going to be 90 freaking degrees with 140 degree track temperature, where everybody's like going, oh, we got to back off because we won't overheat.
Yeah, especially when it's the first race of the season. We don't know what's going on with
right.
The full fuel.
Gotta take care of the engine, you know.
I know.
You got 8 more. What are you worried about?
So, but anyway, no, I'm excited. But it's good to go back and watch some of these older races and make some comparisons. And I think the cars aren't really the biggest issue. I think they're slower, they're lumpier, they're heavier.
Yeah, they're full of fuel.
Yeah, and I thought, to be honest with you,
'05, they're all running the same tires.
No, they're not.
In '05, they weren't, but now they're running all the same tires.
And I thought part of the excitement in '05 was the Michelin versus Bridgestone situation, which a lot of people don't think is great, but I think it's wonderful.
I think it adds a
It's
flavor.
Another element.
Yeah.
It's just like another bump in the road. I mean, it all adds...
Well, it's like adding a chicane to a track.
It's part of the spectacle, and I thought it was exciting. We'll see if we ever go back to that, because I believe Bridgestone is definitely pulling out.
Well, Bridgestone's gone. Whether or not we can get someone else see is whether or not the FIA is willing to entertain more than one tire. I think they. I think they want the money from the contract.
It's not only that, but will the tire companies willingly come in and compete against another tire company? Because that results in higher costs, higher, better tire development for sure.
Yeah, ultimately in R&D, it helps them, but in it's going to be more expensive. Although the per tire cost is going to be higher because one. If you get into something like we had with Bridgestone and Michelin, they were like custom building tires for each track.
It was exciting.
Which was kind of cool.
And it, you know what was fun is Toyota did very well in 2005. Top three, Jarno Trulli. It was Fernando Schumacher and Trulli qualifying. It was very, very exciting.
And then Trulli finished like ninth, right?
I didn't watch the race yet, but I might even watch this qualifying one more time just so I can get happy.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, or if Trulli stayed true to form, he qualifies high and finishes low.
you could be right. Also, a lot of drivers have come out and talked about, maybe we should be consulted. And a lot of drivers have been coming out saying positive things about F1, including Fernando, quote, "We have to wait and see different races and check the situation without being emotional about it. Something which confuses the fan is changing the rules all the time." And I think he's right. Let's not start changing the rules again, because some of our problems is because we're changing the rules too much.
Yeah. Hopefully Jean Todt will limit the dramatic changes going down the road, The fact that you go from refueling to no refueling is a dramatic change.
Correct. And I think Jean Todt will, specifically because he's been in Formula One recently.
Exactly.
Not the end in March back in 1944.
Exactly. Not 25, 30 years ago.
No, and not only that, I don't know. I think Max had a stubborn streak that was detrimental to the sport, even though he did a lot of good things for safety. Which is terrific.
Yeah, there were times, though, when he started, especially towards the end of his career, where he was starting to go after stuff just to go after it, not necessarily whether or not it would improve the sport, but maybe to improve his ego. I've made the sport greener. Oh, I've made it easier for independent teams. Well, but has that actually made it better for the sport?
Not only that, but there's always situations where they think they're saving money, but they're not saving money. For instance, now going into Melbourne, apparently, the FIA has clamped down on the hole for the starter in the diffusers for four teams. They've got to redesign them where it's just a hole and not this weird hole that causes more downforce.
Oh, basically they were using
a loophole.
An aerodynamic quirk in the hole to actually create more help.
Exactly. So four teams, and one of them is Renault.
But it was just a lead into the hole.
and it never ends, but this is going to keep going. And I think it's good. And I think we should get the diffuser thing settled at the beginning of the season.
How about getting the diffuser thing settled before the season freaking starts?
You can't, because the problem is everybody comes up. When I say the word woman, everybody pictures a different woman. And when I say the word diffuser, everybody pictures a different diffuser.
Yeah, and if you happen to be Adrian Newey, it's got five decks and it's...
Five decks, there's a couple of movie complexes in there.
A Haagen-Dazs ice cream store.
Exactly, it's out of control. But anyway, speaking of Adrian Newey, this is the weekend where they can't break down and automatically assume, it's Renault's fault.
Well,
dependability is everything.
I think last week was ridiculous how everybody jumped, it's the motor. Well, let me see. Both Renaults finished the race. Why is it the motor?
Yeah, and not only that, but Renault has a fairly good reputation for building decent motors.
Well, they've won world championships as a motor supplier, which is more than one can say for teams like, the Scuderia.
Would you knock it off, Steven, with the Ferrari thing? But still, I think dependability is everything. Now, speaking of motors, it was interesting. Ron Dennis, who was at home, not breaking any televisions. He hasn't picked up on that bad habit. But he mentioned an interesting fact about why the RB6 broke down, and it may not have been spark plug after all.
It may not have broken down at all.
No, he says the ECU, which controls everything in the world.
So what, McLaren sent the code?
Well,
slow down, we want Lewis to catch you.
No, apparently he thinks that their fuel tank may be too small or the engine is consuming too much fuel, so the ECU automatically grabbed some fuel and starved it to death.
I have a hard time believing.
I do too.
That the ECU could do anything without the
written consent of its owner.
Exactly. You know, the guys in the paddock would have, if that's an available option on the ECU, the guys in the paddock have to have the ability to override it.
Well, you would think so, but the ECU could be programmed to run a certain amount of laps with a certain amount of fuel for a certain amount of safety reasons, including finishing the race.
Yeah, but I would still think that you would be able to send a remote command to override that and take the risk.
But what if they accidentally hit Alt-Control-Delete?
The car stops dead on the track and...
So all this stuff worries me deeply.
Yeah, well,
I like the spark plug scenario much better.
I think the spark plug makes a lot more sense to me.
I agree.
It was providing poor feedback to the ECU, which then in turn.
So let's just hope Red Bull gets us together, because Sebastian Vettel, the great driver he is, deserves, and we deserve a car that's going to finish the race, which it did, and he actually lucked out. Getting fourth place,
huge. Being able to maintain, you know, because when it started, everyone was like, "Oh, be lucky if he gets in the points." And yeah. I don't think anything below fourth was really in doubt. The Mercedes got close, but they were never going to be close enough to get past him.
Right. Okay. Speaking of Mercedes, Schumacher has to improve. Even though he was happy, I think his fans were fairly happy. Of what he accomplished on his comeback.
You're fired.
You're fired.
You got out-qualified by your teammate. Get out of here, you old geezer.
Yeah. No, apparently he was spotted at SeaWorld hugging dolphins and things like that. He's relaxing. And I expect him to slowly get into the rhythm.
Yeah, like I think we mentioned after the race, that, you know, hey, he looked good. But he's not. Nico's not going to out-qualify him every race of the season. Once he starts getting a little bit more familiar with the car and a little bit more comfortable and starts to get his rhythm, he's going to be tough for Nico to keep up with.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be exciting. Each time we see a race, seeing if Schumacher can kick it up another notch or get smoother, it's going to be fun. I got an email over the past couple of days about your favorite show, Steve. I know you don't miss an episode, and that's Dancing with the Stars. And of course, you know, Nasser, I'm sure, is probably still at home watching the last few clips. But apparently Lewis Hamilton was in the audience.
Well, his girlfriend is on the show this season.
Is that what's going on? Now, who's his girlfriend?
Scherzinger.
Oh.
The Pussycat Doll.
Oh. So I thought they had broken up, but they're not broken up?
That was a vicious rumor spread by his enemies.
Okay. See, I'm really slow on this stuff. our producer did text us as soon as he saw Lewis Hamilton on Steve's favorite program.
It's not my favorite. I cut the last 2 minutes because I like the show that's on after it.
Great. Jenson Button trying out the Super V8s. What do you think about
he
that?
He may be in that series before the end of the season.
Oh, come on. Jenson Button's our world champion.
Yeah, and he's going up against another world champion who's a significantly better baby driver than he is.
Well, I thought it was exciting doing a little...
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that what I liked was Jamie Wincup's comments. And they're like, damn, this is a cool car.
Yeah, and now all he needs to do is fly an F-18 and one other thing, and then he's done everything he needs to do in life and he could die.
Well, he could actually do his third one in the F-18 if he had the right fuel load, because you can get an F-18 almost to space.
That's true. That's right. Space. That was the third item. So, no, I was glad for everybody. And it's good promo for Australia and their motorsports program. So keep up the good work, Jenson Button.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good thing to do. And, of course, Vodafone was involved.
I wouldn't be surprised if WinCup can get in an F-18 for the year, end of the year, because I believe that's the aircraft that the Australian Defence Forces fly.
Of course. Not surprised. Keep up the good work, Stephen. Quickly, Renault. They're all pumped up. They've got some new aero stuff.
Ooh, new aero.
They got a new sponsor, too.
New sponsor and a new front wing, which they needed.
So, they got aero in addition to the front wing, or is the front wing the aero?
No, the front wing and some aero to the body and the rear wing.
And they're going to have to get rid of a little bit of it because it's in violation of the rules for the
whole
starting opener.
Well, don't worry. They'll just put a cork in it.
Get a hole saw.
So, no, I'm happy. I'm hoping that Kubica doesn't get hit in the opening lap of the race by some puff of smoke or James Bond activity from Red Bull.
Some red, orange, and I mean a green, white, and orange vehicle?
Yes. So I'm actually expecting good things from Renault. It's going to be pretty exciting. They, I think they have some pace. They've got a good motor. And, of course,
they looked pretty good. If Robert hadn't gotten turned around on that opening lap, he would have been fine.
And we, real quickly, before we go to break, I want to mention Pedro de la Rosa, one of the older
gentlemen on the grid.
Well, at least he's back for, I would say, one season. And, of course, he's hoping that the Sauber C29 improves. But he's got a new sponsor, which is exciting. And it's one of my favorite stores. El Corte Inglés, which is a great store in Spain. Absolutely. When I was young, my mom would take me to El Corte Inglés. And they have knickknacks and paddywhacks and cool clothes. So this is great news for Pedro de la Rosa. That means he's going to be looking swank and hip in some good clothes. Because El Corte Inglés is happening all throughout the major cities in España. Anyway, let's take a quick break while the maintenance crew outside is fixing some plumbing, and we'll return, of course, with the Spinning Globe and Motorsports Mundial after this brief message.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more. And see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the guru, Nasser Hamid.
Hello, sir. Greetings and racing regards. And today we have professional equipment hanging here in the palatial studio. What's the latest here? Did you win the lottery?
No, but, you know, some people have been donating. And this week's thank you goes to Dane Latham for donating to the F1 Weekly coffers. We appreciate it and we thank you. And the donations do work. And, yes, we're getting some new equipment. We already have a new mixing board on order that has not arrived yet. But we're trying to improve the quality, not for me, but for the listeners that love us so much, Nasser.
Well, I thank them too. And so who's the Sir Mix-a-Lot, you or David Tapia?
The third Mix-a-Lot?
Yeah, Sir Mix-a-Lot.
No, I, no. We don't know yet.
Darko got himself as the third Mix-a-Lot.
Okay, anyway, going back to motor racing, we have today in Motorsports Mondial, a Sebring 12 Hours. And NASCAR boys were in Bristol, Tennessee. You know, there's a Bristol, Connecticut also.
There's probably a Bristol over the pond.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. In England, too. And Bristol, Connecticut is where ESPN is based out of, which I'm sure you know. Anyway, And we shall also take a look at the history of the Australian Grand Prix. The 2010 edition is coming this weekend. And you know, I saw on the forum, I think you put it on, Veris Peter Windsor looks like he was in there. But I think today, when I was coming here, and there is a Home Depot on the way, I'm not sure I was driving, but I thought I saw Peter Windsor walking towards the entrance, the will call entrance area, with a box of toasters. So I don't know if that's his double in Australia, what's going on here.
Now, were these toasters crash tested?
Oh, absolutely, okay, FIA approved.
Well, at least he wasn't in an orange apron. That would have been really sad.
Yeah, okay, so we'll keep an eye on the local Home Depot, see what's going on.
Exactly.
Okay, Sebring, home of the very first U.S. Formula One Grand Prix in 1959, past weekend hosted the annual 12-hour race. And I attended this race last year, and I was very happy I got to see this track. And now it has become, actually has been a major international event for sports car racing for many years. Marc Genet grabbed the pole and won the race in his turbo diesel Peugeot, partnered by two other ex-F1 refugees, Alex Wurz of Austria and Anthony Davidson of Hemel Hempstead, England. Did you watch any of the racing, Axel?
Yes, I watched a little bit of it on speed, very exciting.
Jumping when Peugeot was leading?
Exactly, and they led and led and led.
Oh, God.
It was the good life.
I'm sure. Peugeot teammates Pedro Lamy of Portugal, Sebastian Bourdais, your homeboy, and Nicola Minassian, also your homeboy, were second. Third was the Lola Aston Martin of Stefan Mücke of Germany, Harald Primart, and Adrian Fernandez. And another series that took off there, opening race, was Star Mazda series. And this has now become a pretty important series because Formula Atlantic has sunk, unfortunately. So, the opening race of the Star Mazda series was won by Tristan Wautier of France. Second was Jorge Gonçalves of Venezuela. And Connor Daly, son of Derek Daly, was third. Oh, we've talked about this gentleman before. In IRL News, Bertrand Baguette will drive in the series this year for his Belgian homie and team owner, Eric Bachelard. And I hear a rumor that they are seeking sponsorship from Wonder Bread, or the deal will be toast.
That's beautiful, Nas. Poetry.
Thank you, sir. Okay, GP2 testing at Paul Ricca. Pastor Maldonado of Venezuela set the fastest time on both Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, so which is impressive. And as I mentioned to you, Moa is going to Montmelo for the Brazilian, for the Spanish Grand Prix. It's been a tough day. And I'm looking forward to doing a chat. We interviewed him a couple of years ago, and hoping to catch up with other GP2, GP3, Formula BMW, maybe one or two ex-F1 people if I get lucky.
It's very possible.
Yeah, we'll try. Johnny Cecotto Jr., son of motorcycle champion and one-time teammate of Ayrton Senna in Formula 1 in 1984, has signed with Italian team Trident to race in this year's GP2 championship. And a couple of years ago, Johnny Jr. was in the German F3 and did pretty well. Now we come to a rising star of the future, Nico Hülkenberg. This was interesting. Frank Williams is hoping to keep the 22-year-old German in his... This kid is a pretty tall guy. He's over 6 feet tall. And Mr. Williams is trying to keep him in his team for a long time, saying, and this is very impressive, apart from Lewis Hamilton, Hülkenberg is the only driver who has won every championship he has competed in. Just as a point of reference, the only championship Sebastian Vettel has ever won is the Formula BMW. The only championship Mr. Kubica has ever won is the World Series by Renault. So when you're winning every championship along the way, it's all along the watchtower, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, Jimmy.
Okay, thank you. This is Sir Frank Williams. He was also quoted as saying, "I found it very unprofessional that Willie Weber is saying Hülkenberg will be with Ferrari in 2013, which he recently made a comment regarding this. And I'll tell you, if Sir Williams thinks this is unprofessional, wait till he gets a fax early morning like Eddie Jordan did from Herr Weber, saying, Achtung, Frankie, my client will not drive for you, Wiedersehen. Remember when all hell broke loose after Schumacher did the Spa race with Jordan and faxes start coming from Mercedes and Willie Weber? And of course, we all know by now, Willie Weber is Nico's manager also. Monza, my favorite place, and I understand you're going to Monza in September.
We're working on it. It looks like it's a done deal.
Have you told the people?
No, I have not.
Oh, you should. Well, you know, I'll see if I can make it because it is my favorite racetrack, and it's beautiful. You have to go on the banking. I did that in 1982.
And have pasta?
No, tears are rolling
down. Tears?
Yeah. Feelings. Okay, Monza, Thunder in the Park to continue at least until 2016. Bernie has blessed Monza with hosting the Italian Grand Prix till 2016. Monza and its history were not built in a day, so it is good to see that Rome is not taking away the Gran Premio from Parco Monza. That would have really pissed me off.
That would have pissed me off, too.
To take it from Monza and put it on the streets. The
streets of Rome, that there are rules.
Yeah, exactly, and minimum standards. Monza has been hosting Italian Grand Prix since 1922 and has seen more Formula One races than any other track in the world. Only time Italian Grand Prix was not held at Monza was in 1980 when it was staged at Imola and was won by Nelson the Full Piquet.
Senior.
Yeah, Nelson Piquet in a Brabham. Lucky 13, oh, this is serious business. We may have to go back to Home Depot for corporate sponsorship. FIA is taking applications till April 15th for the 13th team to be added next year. After this year's debacle with new teams, they will also select two reserve teams, which I think is a good idea. They might want to select three or four reserve teams. And I have a great idea. You know, this time we had an Australian journalist and an American engineer, right? Maybe we should try an American journalist and an Australian engineer. And I have a, you know, concept here. How about teaming Jack Arud with Larry Perkins and start a team based in, you know, Charlotte was not too far away from Europe, so let's try a new team in Okefenokee, Florida, and call it USF1, take two.
Let's do it.
And, you know, it's first you don't succeed, try again.
And Jack Arud is capable.
Oh, absolutely. You got to keep trying. And pretty soon, Dave Brubeck will have a team too, USF1, take five.
I think we need an AUF1. You know, we'll go to Australia and try it from there.
Good idea. It's an open mind all across the pond. Any comments on this?
No, I think it's beautiful.
Thank you, sir. Dakar Rally to stay in South America. You know, the African continent really got the shaft on this deal because they were making a lot of money and there was a lot of, you know.
Yeah, but there were problems with terrorism and everything else.
Yeah, but Dakar Rally is going to stay in South America, once known as Paris to Dakar. The event will be staged in Argentina and Chile for the third year running in 2011.
They should change the name, though.
No, I think it's. I like the name. I like the name. And that logo is very nice.
Yeah, that is true.
That logo and the logo for Detroit Red Wings. I love those two logos.
Very good.
Seriously.
It's all coming out in the wash, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely. No, I did not say I like the logo for the Camping Truck World Series.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. From Dakar to DTM, 3 years in a row is also the story of Ralf Schumacher in 2010 with Mercedes. Check this out. His best finish in 2 years of DTM racing is fifth at Dijon-Prenois last year.
Well, that's because they had a big poster of him at Dijon-Prenois. I was there.
Really?
Yeah, I saw it. It was huge. And for a nickel, you could kiss him.
Is that expensive?
He would do the ears over his heads over his ears, mm-hmm. Give you the funny face.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's great because now you know both Schumachers are with Mercedes. It's one happy German family.
Well, certainly hope so. Okay, next is Swiss misses. Three Swiss ladies will share a Ford in the new FIA GT1 Championship. They are Cindy Allemand, who was racing here a couple of years ago, Rahel Frey, and Natasha Gachnon, who is cousin of Sebastian Buemi. Natasha will also race in another news. You know, we have all these economic hardship, but you got new series coming all the time. Now they have a series called Auto GP. So she's going to be in that. And it looks like, I've not been able to confirm, but it looks like Adrian Tambay is now headed to Auto GP also. There was hope that he would go to GP3. But now he's going, you know, a lot depends on your sponsor. Both him and Natasha are part of the Gravity Management, people who own the Renault team now. So let's see what happens. Our man Frank Montani will drive in the Super League Formula, which is the creation of Flavio, for the French football team Bordeaux. These are good-looking cars. Have you seen these cars?
These are very nice-looking cars and very powerful.
Yeah, and designed and produced in Atlanta by Elan Motorsport Technology, which I believe is owned by Mr. Gentleman who owns the Don Panos, you know, the American Le Mans series. And they are powered by a V. I was trying to find out. It's powered by a V12 engine producing 750 horsepower. But in I was looking quickly. I couldn't figure out who the engine supplier is. But we shall get down to the heart of the matter soon. The series is, this is my favorite. The series is sponsored by Sonangol, the National Oil Company of Angola. And you know, our man, Dr., the official psychiatrist of F1 Weekly, Dr. Miguel, has spent some time in Angola. With all the oil in the country, I am surprised Bernie has not yet worked his karma for an F1 race in Cabinda, which is the oil-producing region of the... And, you know, I kid you not, some years ago I was flying overseas and the guy sitting next to me was wearing a Sonangol cap, turned out to be one of their engineers on one of the oil tankers. And, you know, we were talking about Cabinda and other issues there. And he says, yeah, Cabinda is the oil-producing region and it's the area where locals have a hard time getting fuel. There's a fuel shortage for the local. It's typical. You know. Yeah, absolutely. Formula 2, this is very interesting, you know. Formula 2 driver signings. Dean Stoneman, who won the Formula Renault UK Championship last year, and Parthiva Sureshwaran of India are the latest drivers to sign up for the series. And late breaking news yesterday late night was that Indian movie star Ajit Kumar will also race in this series. And that will make him the third Indian in F2 this season. I tell you what, this is a great coup for F2 because with the movie star coming that everybody knows in India, this series is going to become very popular. And what happens then? Everybody knows this series, so anybody wants to go to Europe, they think F2. So good for them. Ah, now we come to your favorite series, NASCAR News from Bristol, Tennessee. Win number 50 for Jimmy Johnson. Very, very impressive. Tony Stewart, this guy is taking a lot of heat from media people for his attitude towards them. He was second in the, I've been reading a couple of blogs where people are a little, he's kind of like insulting and I don't know why, but even though he's doing well, but you know, we'll find out what's going on there. And Kurt Busch was third. And of course, Kurt Busch drives for Roger Penske. And your favorite driver, Greg Biffle, was fourth. Monty was 26th. And Scott Speed was 31st.
The Formula One boys keep impressing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, now we come to famous last words. This really got my attention. I'm quoting a very well-known racing driver, NASCAR driver. Here we go. You know, when Arnold Palmer came on TV with an old tractor and told me to buy Pennzoil, I bought that. And when Dale Jarrett advertises UPS, I can go along with that too. But I don't think having an 18-year-old, somebody who's probably gotten 5 packages in his life and they were all Girls Gone Wild videos, tell me what delivery service I should use would have much effect on me. End of quote from Kyle Petty, son of Richard Petty, and I can only say thank you for delivering truth in advertising. So how many packages you receive from Girls Gone Wild?
About 16.
16, all the editions?
The full volume set.
Wow, very impressive. Yes. Very good. Okay, shall we take a break for tea? Because next is a moment in motorsport
history.
Yes,
let's take a break for tea and let the maintenance crew finish up the yard. So we'll be back in 60 seconds.
Liebe Fans, hier ist Mario Theissen. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß mit F1 Weekly und natürlich mit der ganzen Formel 1 Saison.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com, and now, a moment in motorsports history.
Thank you, sir. And this edition is brought to you in part by John Deere Lawnmowers. Once upon a time, on April 21, 1985, in a faraway place called Portugal. You've heard of that place, right?
Portugal?
Yeah.
Of course I have.
At the Autódromo do Estoril, near Cascais, a man wins his first Formula One race on a rainy day. This is how the historic moment was recorded in his country.
Uma carreira fantástica em todas as categorias inferiores. No seu primeiro ano numa equipe competitiva, ele vem pela reta. O diretor da prova faz outro sinal. Olhou o cronômetro. Bandeirada para ele. Ayrton Senna. Ayrton Senna. o Nigel Mansell jogou o carro fora. Ele já abriu o cinto, ergue os braços. Ayrton Senna faz a sua festa no Estoril. O brasileiro Ayrton Senna, fantástico.
The rest is history and never to be forgotten story. And Mr. Rogers, this race, of course, was in 1985, April. I got to the good old USA in January. I'm all excited, 5 in the morning, sitting few inches from the TV, so, you know, don't wake up everybody else, watching this race. And this was fairly early in the race. And they showed Michele Alboreto's Ferrari go by. And I think John Bisignano was one of the commentators, and he said, that's the fourth place, Michele Alboreto in a Ferrari. And shortly afterward came the race leader, Ayrton Senna, in his black and gold Lotus. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of race to run, and he's already lapping, about to lap the fourth place guy. That was a incredible performance. Do you remember that race?
Yes.
Yeah, and there's a very famous picture of Ayrton Senna pulling into the pit lane, paddock lane, and all the Lotus mechanics are there, and Peter Ward is just like totally elated. So fantastic race, fantastic coverage. And, you know, we move on. Okay, now we come to, we haven't done this in a while, but now we have a triple play. What's in your iPod? Flavio Nelsinho and Romain Grosjean. Remember him?
I remember him.
Yeah, all of a sudden they have developed the same musical taste. So take it away, Mr. Engelbert Humperdinck, please.
Lonely table just for one, in a bright and crowded room, while the music has begun, I drink to memories in the gloom.
Thank you for listening. Cheers, mate. And, but wait, there's more.
It never ends.
It never ends. See, if there is no race, I got to keep doing these things. I got to keep moving like a shark, you know. So may I proceed with your express written consent?
By all means.
Thank you, sir. Now we're going to look at the history of Australian Grand Prix. And I had a lot of fun doing this because I remember most of the races watching. And it's good to remember a few things from days gone by. Okay, so the first Formula One Australian Grand Prix. Now, there were Australian Grand Prix many in the 50s and 60s, but they were not FIA-sanctioned World Championship events. So the first Formula One Australian Grand Prix was staged in 1985 as the season finale. The first winner here and scoring his final Grand Prix win was Mr. Keke Rosberg in a Williams Honda. Jacques Lafitte and Philippe Streff were second and third, respectively, for Ligier, powered by Renault. Exactly. Lotus driver Elio De Angelis was disqualified for starting from the wrong grid position. And of course, the race in those days used to be on the streets of Adelaide. And if anybody has a copy of this race or you want to see highlights, Ayrton Senna did a lot of John Deere off-course driving. It was pretty interesting. That was his second year and, of course, first year with Lotus. Turn the page to 1986 Australian Grand Prix, remembered, of course, for Nigel Mansell's championship hopes going up in smoke after the Goodyear Tarfar.
Tarfar.
You remember that race? Oh, were you watching it live?
Yeah.
I could not believe
Tarfar
it.
Tarfar in Formula One is exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Both him and teammate Nelson Piquet lost a certain championship to the surprise race winner, Monsieur Alain Prost. And I'll never forget his, when he got out of the car, he was just like, what happened here? You know, he had no chance of winning the race or the championship, and there he was. So you never quit, you know. That's the moral of the story.
That's our motto here at F1 Weekly.
Yeah, never exactly. Quit. Yeah, never quit. Oh, absolutely. You know, how long we've been doing this now? This
is 17 years.
Really? We started doing before the internet came?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, cool.
It's all those years before we realized we could tape it.
Yeah. 1987, Gerhard Berger led a Ferrari 1-2 with Michele Alboreto second. Dr. Jonathan Palmer, who now runs Brands Hatch and several other tracks in UK, and is also running the Formula 2 Championship, was fourth in his Tyrrell. 1988, Alain Prost led a McLaren 1-2 with Ayrton Senna second, and this is races of historical importance. This was the last Grand Prix of the Turbo era.
which was featured, of course, mentioned in our Powered by Turbo calendar also, if you recall. The 1989 race had a lot of rain and some surprises. Winner was Thierry Boutsen in a Williams over Alessandro Nannini in a Benetton. Satoru Nakajima, Papito of Kazuki, was fourth in a Lotus Jard and, believe it or not, set the fastest lap of the race. This is the race which provided the famous video of Ayrton Senna running into the back of his old British F3 buddy, Martin Brundle, which I'm sure you have seen. And the race was stopped at the two-hour mark. You know, they have this rule in Formula 1, you cannot go more than 2 hours. Welcome to 1990, Nelson Piquet in a Benetton winning over the Ferraris of Il Leone, Nigel Mansell, and Alain Prost. 1991, only 14 of 81 laps were completed when the race was stopped due to heavy downpour. Senna in the rain was the winner, Mansell second, and Gerhard Berger third. 1992, winner was Gerhard Berger in a McLaren. Fastest lap was set by second place driver in a Benetton. You may have heard of him by the name of Michael Schumacher.
Schumacher.
Yeah. And this weekend, Ross Brawn will be singing Baby Got Back. I'm sure he's excited. And I am sure in a competitive car, Michael will be Sir Mix-a-Lot. And I expect him to mix-a-lot if it rains. They were talking about rain and practice or qualifying.
On Friday.
Yeah. Do you know what the forecast is for Sunday? Sunday!
Do I look like a weatherman?
Yeah, actually you do with that Renault, Williams cap, Elf, Mile 7. Okay, Martin Brundle, who will be doing the grid walk for the Beep on Sunday, was third back in 1992 in his Benetton. And we continue the Australian Grand Prix wrapping with the 1993 edition. Final Grand Prix win in the life and time of Ayrton Senna, his last drive for McLaren before heading for Williams. Alain Prost was second in a Williams ahead of teammate R. Damon, who set the fastest lap. Jean Alesi found some new motivation and land down under and finished fourth in a Ferrari. Now we're talking 1993. Rubinho was in this race also, finishing 11th for Eddie Jordan. This guy might be driving when your grandkids are follow watching Formula 1. 1994, Il Leone, Nigel Mansell takes his final win in the final race of the season in a Williams. Berger was second in a Ferrari. This is a very important race. Martin Brundle was third in a McLaren Peugeot. Others in this race included such luminaries of Formula 1 as Heinz Harald Frentzen, Mika Salo, Alex Zanardi, and F1 reject favorite from Switzerland, Jean-Denis Deletraz. Now, this is where it gets exciting. Damon Hill was not in the mood to win the world championship and crashed into Michael Schumacher, who, according to Willy Weber, he was like shell-shocked to become the first German world champion. A little writer's embellishment there.
I like that.
Were you watching this race also?
Oh, absolutely. That's the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. 1995, final race in Adelaide won by Damon Hill in his Williams. Ligier of Olivier Panis was second in practice. Mika Hakkinen survived a near-fatal crash. And man who qualified 15th did not start, Luca Badoer. Poor guy. Okay, 1996, race was walk in the park for Williams team in Melbourne. Dramatic Grand Prix debut for Jacques Villeneuve from pole position and second place in the race. And the race itself was won by his teammate, Damon Hill. 1997, first Grand Prix win for Mercedes-powered McLaren driven by DC, Tricky Dicky's favorite, David Coulthard, and Schumacher was second with Mika Hakkinen third. 1998, McLaren 1-2, Mika over DC. And finally, we come to the 1999 race, first Grand Prix win for Eddie Irvine in a Ferrari. Heinz Harald Frentzen was second, and Ralf Schumacher third. Fisico was fourth. Remember him?
I remember Fisichella.
Yeah. Fisico was fourth for Benetton. You know, do you remember him saying the winning car they promised never came?
Yeah.
You know what Pit Pass editor wrote in his column? He said, what was he expecting? A car which was same as Alonso, but on the side said, this is a winning car? That was pretty bad. So Fisico was fourth for Benetton and Rubinho fifth for the wee Scott Stewart Racing. So, folks, that was a brief history of the Australian Grand Prix. Thank you for listening and have a fair dinkum day or evening, as the case may be. Ta-ta!
Thank you, Nas, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. It doesn't get better than that. Any thoughts quickly before we wrap it up going into Melbourne this weekend? Any predictions? Fernando Alonso winning probably.
Ferrari and I think Red Bull would be very strong, and I do expect her Schumacher to be a little bit more in the thick of things.
I think I predict second row for Schumacher.
Yeah, and it's just, and you know they always have a lot of, if I remember correctly, at least one or two yellow caution situation there.
Yeah, it could be a safety car.
Yeah, so he may have a good chance of the podium, and you know Lewis Hamilton is a hustler in any situation, so I expect him to do good. Let's see what Jenson Button has, you know, for round two.
Well, Button needs to prove himself. Oh, yeah. He's already under the gun.
Yeah, but if it's raining, then watch out for my man in the rain.
Hulkenberg?
Nico Hulkenberg.
Well,
I would love to see this kid in the rain.
Even though Rubinho has held his own for the old man of the sea.
Yeah, but, you know, Schumacher is also way beyond extremely good in the rain. We all know that.
Yeah.
And I think somebody who won the race in Japan in 2007 was very, very impressive, too. Who was that? Luham?
What?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, you know, as much everybody wanted, you know, it's going to be a competitive season, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Look what they got in
Which
Bahrain.
One of the new teams will not finish the race?
Or which one will finish the race?
Will not finish the race. I hope they all do. But I think the Campos made a look. I mean, what is it called? What is it? HRT?
Hispania
look,
Racing
yeah,
Team.
Yeah, it looks weak. And the Virgin, you know, they're still in Virgin territory.
Okay. I'm hoping Lotus improve and maybe do better than Toro Rosso.
Hmm.
Jaime Alguersuari, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Toro Rosso is certainly not as strong as they were last year. Excuse me. And, of course, Force India looking pretty good. They're counting into the points.
Yeah.
Force India with Adrian Sutil and Vitantonio Liuzzi.
Yeah.
So it should be pretty exciting.
I say go Nico Hülkenberg.
Go Nico Hülkenberg. Okay, that's the word of the day.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. Thank you very much. We're going to go right into the wrap-up with the forum updates.
Forum updates this week from our friend Tricky Dicky. This week on the forum has been a variety of heated debates. Tributes have been started for Ayrton Senna, who would have been 50 years of age this month. Tricky Dicky has once again slated Mark Webber, describing him as moany and boring. Indeed, Frank Douglasson has laughed off comments from Webber. Mark's claims to fame has always been that he is in the whitest car on the grid, and now he wants other people to figure out a way to make more overtaking. Shut up, Mark. The possibility of Williams and VW joining forces has sparked much speculation. However, individuals such as Jay have condemned the thought of having another manufacturer in the sport. Koala has made numerous posts relating to the Mazda MX-5. Indeed, he has conceded that the car itself is of poor design and does not compare to sporting classics. Jackson has had a busy week on the forum and has declared his absolute love for Bernie Ecclestone. Indeed, he has made posts such as, "Bernie has a fascinating personality and intellectual mind," and "I wish Bernie would sign a modeling contract." In other news, Frank Douglasson has recently invested in his first manual car, a Peugeot 406 Estate Coupe. His first impressions of the car praise the workmanship of the French craftsman who designed and built this European classic. Dr. Mark surprised many of the forums in this week by purchasing a Ford Mondeo. After reading comments from Chemix and Ye on the subject of the Mondeo's divine attributes, Dr. Mark felt convinced that it was the best car for the money and much better than the awful MX-5. Finally, Stephen Clark's relationship has once again come into question. There are various suggestions that Clark is pinching Steve under the desk, ow, and that Steve is experiencing physical and mental bullying. We at the forum want to send out support to Clark, who clearly is struggling to get to grips with westernized culture. A possible solution to this problem would be replacing Steve and Clark with Nasser and Dez. Which brings us on to Dez. The forum would like an assurance that Dez is alive and not being held hostage in Clark's shed. I might be able to shed just a tiny bit on that in the fact that if she is in the shed, she does have her cell phone because she texted me a couple of times at the end of the race last week letting me know that, woohoo, Formula's back, and we chatted a little bit about I asked her what her feelings were about the fact that Kimi was gone, and she was, well, at least I get to see him in a suit for the rally, so she wasn't too distraught.
Well, Steve, I am civilized. I do provide her with television.
She probably gets, you know, a Stella once a week, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Some good, well, she's going to get good French cheese.
Exactly.
She probably gets a baguette or two.
My shed is civilized. Okay, since Tricky Dicky's on a roll with the forum updates, he's also got an email. Recently on the forum, we have been debating the pros and cons of driving a manual rather than an automatic car. I would be interested to know if Clark, which a European background, owns a manual transmission car. I know he likes his French classics. I would be interested to hear whether the F1 Weekly team thinks manuals are better to drive than automatics.
My first question is, does Clark Rogers own an automatic?
I don't. All my cars are manual because I think automatics are a bit feminine.
Well, they're not vintage, that's for sure.
Yes, of course. I drive vintage cars, and all my cars are manual transmission, even my pickup.
Yeah, I actually drive an automatic, but have owned several manual transmission vehicles in my illustrious... My first three vehicles were manual transmissions. I started in a Toyota Celica, and then moved on to a Toyota Corolla. Both of them with manual transmissions.
Well, good for you, Steven. And of course, Nass has a limo driver.
Yeah.
In a stretch Camry. So he doesn't worry about that. He just lounges and drinks tea. So thank you, Tricky Dick, for all the input. We appreciate your support here on the F1 Weekly Forum and everything else. So quickly, let's go
to the end credits.
To the wrap-up, this weekend, San Francisco Formula One Group is meeting in the city at Zeke's Diamond Bar and Grill. It's going to be March 27th, 10:30 p.m. race. Flag drops at 11 p.m., and they have food and drink. It's a fantastic atmosphere. It's at 600 3rd Street, downtown San Francisco, and you can give them a call, 415-392-5311. Great way to meet hot babes in the middle of the city. Maroon Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Maroon Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. Just go to maroonkarting.com. MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter, we're there. Do a search for us. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, just email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
And just a reminder to everyone that after the race, put your comments on the race, on the forum, 50 words or less, and we'll read them on the show, on the race wrap-up show on Sunday.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.